previously on Wisco Weekly.
So I'm not exactly paying my fair share for the wear and tear that I put in on our roads. Now, I obviously the benefit to the environment and all of that. But so when you start thinking about use fees for the 21st century, a lot of discussion is, hey, pay for what you use. So you can pay for what you use, maybe by mileage.
And on this episode,
if it's better for your wallet, if it's better for your health, if it's better for your productivity, it's better for you not to drive.
But the flip side of it is the independence of your mobility. This is Wisco Weekly, an automotive business podcast sharing the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicka brown, chicken brown cow. Listeners, welcome to another episode of Wisco Weekly, where we share the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive. And there is a topic that has been floating around the interwebs, and specifically, there was an article written by an LA Times reporter named Laura Nelson. Laura, if you're out there, hello. We are going to be talking about you on this particular episode. And so this particular article was referencing the idea that LA County is throwing around with regards to congestion pricing. Now, I, for one, can't say that I'm initially for this just yet, but I certainly know that I am not for paralysis and analysis paralysis, where we continue to talk about what's the best way to alleviate traffic and continue to get bogged down study after study after study. I would think, to a certain respect, we have a lot of information, especially, and maybe this is some of the things that we'll get to talk about today, the INRIX traffic study that came out last year. But congestion pricing is a model that LA County is talking about to relieve traffic. Congestion pricing deals with the idea that you're essentially regulating demand because you have an already set supply, and you're not really trying to increase or decrease the supply. You're just trying to limit or regulate the demand. So how this plays out would be the demand of the roads by all these cars coming in and out of LA. And the supply would be the fact that you just can't build any more roads. So then what do you do? There have been cases around the world. A lot of times people are citing London and Stockholm to be the pinnacle of where we should model congestion pricing after. Although we don't know for certain if they have it figured out. And so because we are on the precipice of implementing congestion pricing, it's only fair that not only it's me that talks about it, but of course, it's my good friend and our transportation professional, Rudy Solo, who is a public finance attorney, that he chimes in to see and to understand, and as we analyze what indeed are the implications of congestion pricing. So Rudy, what's up? Welcome back, as always.
Always a pleasure to be here, Dennis, and you're always talking about a topic that is near and dear in my heart, which is the pain.
It gets you aroused, huh?
It doesn't get me aroused. It gets me angry.
Ornery.
Very ornery. And you know what that is? It's traffic.
Oh, tell me about it.
It's what I hate the most. One of the things that I hate the most in the world about, you know, living where I do, which is in Los Angeles County. I live in Manhattan Beach, but I commute into downtown LA. Actually, I don't commute. I have chosen to use public transportation to get from my home to downtown Los Angeles.
You public commute?
I do. I public commute. I have that
public
option.
Commuter. You.
Well, I think this is important for our discussion of congestion pricing, and if we're going to be doing a comparison of what Los Angeles has versus London and Stockholm and these other places, and that's the issue of if you're going to implement congestion pricing, do you have an alternative built out? for people to go and use.
That is definitely top of my mind and how I was thinking about congestion pricing as well. Because again, it's like to not do anything is just no longer, it's no longer a solution. But then is it so, you know, are we supposed to say, are we supposed to take these idea of congestion pricing with this simplistic view of, okay, once you implement it, then traffic dies down and we're all good again? And I don't believe that's the case. If you don't provide the additional education, the additional, you know, if you don't propose the alternative methods of transportation, then what good is congestion pricing? Especially, I mean, you're taking a really big risk to implement that in Los Angeles.
Yeah, let's go through, and I like to do a lot of analysis. I always base things based upon history and facts on the ground. Okay, so where has congestion pricing been implemented, and you know, with some success? London, which we all know has the tube. It has a very well-built-out public transit system. Everybody uses it. It's world famous. It's almost as famous as the New York subway. And Stockholm, which I believe also has a very good public transit. Now, our rail network in Los Angeles, our modern rail network, I mean, we used to have the Pacific Rail Car and Red Car, but that got taken to task for many reasons back in the 1940s and 50s. In the last 30 years is when we've had an alternative in Los Angeles County, and it's getting built out, and it's going to be built out even more over the next 10 years between now and the Olympics. Why is that important if we're talking about congestion pricing? Why is the train, and not just train, but bus system? I mean, our public transportation system implements buses. I use a combination of buses and trains because if you're going to actually implement congestion pricing, you're going to make it so much more prohibitively expensive for people who can't afford it to get to their jobs. Well, like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to allow these people to get to work? Thankfully, today in Los Angeles, there are many different alternatives that people can choose to go to their job rather than paying whatever it's going to be congestion pricing-wise. In a lot of ways,
what are we talking about here? What are the many ways we're talking about? Okay. Public transportation.
We're talking about
bus, train.
We have
micromobility, rideshare.
Yeah, we're talking about everything.
Okay.
And speaking of rideshare, I'm going to talk about an event that I went to today, which is pretty exciting. We have now over 100 miles worth of rail in Los Angeles. That's just metro rail. Like we have the Metrolink. There's Amtrak. There's plenty of bus lines, but we have alternatives to get to. Most of the rail network goes to the central nerve, which is downtown Los Angeles, although now it's starting to spread out into other places. So the congestion pricing where it's being considered right now, from what my understanding is primarily in downtown Los Angeles. Metro hasn't released the policy yet, the congestion pricing policy yet, so we'll just see where they're thinking about it. I would hope that they would also consider congestion pricing someplace on the 405, which is an absolute nightmare.
That's what I take.
But here's the issue, Dennis. There's no train that really goes out to Century City and Beverly Hills at the moment. Now, they're building that. You know, there's the Expo line that goes from downtown to Santa Monica, so there's some relief. And, you know, hopefully the Purple Line will be extended out. You never know, Could be some litigation. They stopped the train once in the mid-1980s. You never know what can happen. Hopefully nothing happens. But that my point is if you're going to implement congestion pricing, you must have alternatives. Now, thankfully, in Los Angeles, there are a lot more alternatives. There are scooters, which help with the first mile, last mile. There are a lot of e-bikes. You can see bikes now at the end of metro rail stations. And there's something that launched today, which is really interesting. Like, literally, I was at a big press release party today for the launch of VIA, which is a ride-sharing program. Think about Uber and Lyft. You have an app and a car comes and it picks you up from your house and it takes you somewhere. VIA is...
How do you spell that? VIA?
VIA.
Okay.
It's been in New York, but now it's the Metro launch. It's launched today. I was at the El Monte station for it, whereby through an app, you could be able to get that first mile, last mile ride sharing solution from a metro stop. Because one of the problems with metro, and I'll agree that this is a problem for me, is several people live 1 to 2 miles away from it, okay? Because it that's just the way some train stops work. And most people get in their cars, and while perhaps maybe they intend to drive to the station and park, sometimes there's not parking. Sometimes once you're in your car, you're like, forget it, I'm just going to drive into work. Obviously, if congestion pricing is there and it becomes much more expensive for you to drive into work, that will drive you that'll drive you away from spending more of that money. So at least there's these alternatives that are building out. Technology, companies that are getting into micro transit, companies that are doing more micro mobility. It's a great time to be thinking about alternatives to heavy reliance upon the personal vehicle. But a lot more needs to be built. A lot more transit stations need to be built, and a lot more apps need to be built, and attitudes and mindsets need to be changed. And sometimes when it hurts your wallet, that's when you change your habits. Because I'll tell you, what happened was LA converted the 110 freeway. They converted the carpool lane and then the 10 freeway. They converted those carpool lanes to express lanes.
Yeah, right.
And for a while, I was using those express lanes because it was super cheap. It was very, very cheap to use those, and it was great. And then it got really, really expensive.
I'm trying to think. How much now is it to go from, let's say, West LA to downtown?
It's not West LA. It's the 110 freeway.
Yeah.
So that's think like the 10 from like, you know, the where the 105 and the 110 meet, or like San Pedro area. It's about $18 to get from the 105 freeway.
That's crazy.
To the Coliseum in downtown LA. Wow. $18 just to ride it during rush hour. So in a way, it's almost like congestion pricing for the people that became addicted to using the express lanes. Now, I stopped doing that about, you know, three or four years ago, and I went solely to public transportation.
Why? Because it was hitting the wallet?
Yes, because it ticked up all the way up to $15. And I just said, this is ridiculous. And then I you know, learned about the Commuter Express, which is a luxury bus that LADOT puts out that has Wi-Fi and reclining seats. And they put a stop like by a station by my house. And I've become like an addict of that. And I'm a big, you know, hallelujah guy when it comes to public transportation.
Well, so, I mean, you had mentioned something that I think is the other part of the equation that doesn't get often talked about. And Laura mentions it here. So I want to get your thoughts on this. And that is, so when you have congestion pricing, you have revenue, and all of a sudden, where does the revenue go? You can apply it to infrastructure. You can apply it to transits. Well, as she says in the article here, the billions of dollars that congestion pricing would generate could pay for an investment in transit so that major buses could run every 90 seconds on many streets. Actually, I'm sorry, Washington said this. Who's Washington? Metro's Washington.
Yeah, he's the head. Yeah, that's correct. Metro.
So my thing about it, though, right, is that we're talking about billions of dollars being raised through congestion pricing, but that's also fighting a culture where, what was it, like 3 out of 4, or let's see, Los Angeles is a driving city with more than 84% of commuters in the Los Angeles, Long Beach, Anaheim metropolitan area choosing to drive alone or carpool to work. So we're talking about, on one hand, raising billions of dollars to allocate to infrastructure, to transit projects, but yet you still have a majority of the population in Los Angeles that are for driving. So then, like, how do you reconcile the fact that
it's very simple. Uh-huh. You want to know why it's 84%? Because it's free. The freeway was invented in Los Angeles. We don't toll, okay? That's the issue. If you actually put the crunch on people's wallet and they know that it's going to be expensive, in addition to the gas, in addition to the time that they waste, they're going to have to pay $10, $15, $30. Guess what's going to happen? They're going to change their habits, because that's what happened with me. I got briefly, when the 110 express lanes opened up, I went from using public transportation, because I was using the green line to the blue line. I started using my car again, and I started driving in because it was, like I said, it was cheap in the beginning. And then it got really expensive. And then it changed my habit. So you gotta hurt the wallet, okay? The reason why people, 84%, is because it's free. And now is the time. Now that attitudes of millennials' attitudes of people towards the wasting of the time and traffic. And not only that, you got to think about this, Dennis. In the advent of the smartphone and the amount of work that a person can do on a smartphone, it makes sense to not drive. If it's better for your wallet, if it's better for your health, if it's better for your productivity, it's better for you not to drive.
But the flip side of it is the independence of your mobility, right? The fact that now I cannot just say, hey, it is 5:41 and I'm going to go home. Now I got to wait at 5:45 to leave so I can walk 10 minutes down the road to catch the bus, that the bus takes me 10 minutes to get home. But at least, you know, like it's no longer upon my independent schedule to travel freely.
I agree with you. I've had to change the way I work. I'm much more schedule driven. I'm much more productive because I don't dilly-dally, because I live by schedules now. But I'm going to tell you something right now. You said 5:41. Nobody in LA would want to get on a road at 5:41. But I'll tell you this. I'll get on a commuter express bus that has its own designated lane. I will get on the train because you want to know why? Because I know how long it's going to take me to get home. If I get into a car, it could be an hour. It could be an hour and a half. It could be 45 minutes. So I argue against what you say about independence. I think relying upon an alternative like public transit and buses that have their own lanes makes it so your schedule becomes much more predictable.
I would actually agree with you on that. I can see that adjustment happening. I recall with a brief work stint that I had in New York, how at that time I didn't have a car. I simply just used public transportation and taxis. But certainly the times that I was, I had to go for meetings and whatnot, my day was on a regular schedule. And there was something kind of liberating about that. I mean, knowing the fact that I don't have to think anymore that, 10 a.m. I need to, get downstairs. It's like, it's already there. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m., I got to be downstairs. And so everything else just kind of gets reprogrammed around that schedule. I get that. One of the things, it still doesn't sit too pretty with me, though. So, for instance, INRIX produced a study called the Traffic Scorecard that was discussing traffic in 2017. Los Angeles was the top of the list as the world's most gridlocked city, with drivers spending an average of 102 peak hours in congestion. Peak hours would be defined as, 9 a.m. to 12, and I think 2 to 5 is peak hours.
I think it's probably a little bit earlier than that because I'm out on the roads during earlier times.
I'm a late worker.
I know. I hear you.
Late bloomer.
I'm not.
But so, so you do have 102 hours that LA drivers are wasting in traffic. And then in addition to that, they say that congestion costs Los Angeles drivers over $2,800 on average, which equals to be $19.2 billion to the city as a whole. So if you do have this loss of productivity of approximately $2,900 for the year, my question is, if that in turn gets spent to infrastructure, what would be the most immediate impact for you? Where would you like to see your $2,900 go?
More programs like I saw today, more first mile, last mile solutions. Okay. I don't want to have to drive to my metro station. I want to press an app and have some kind of option or vehicle there, some partnership, some public-private partnership. There are a lot of opportunities here for companies that are interested in mobility to help government agencies fill in the transportation gaps. I was commending how much Los Angeles has built out over the last 30 years, but there's a lot of gaps, Dennis. I want to fill those gaps because it's the people that live in those gaps that are driving because they're not being served. If you take a look at a metro map of Los Angeles, of the current built trains. Mm-hmm. And there's huge gaps of where a lot of people live. They don't have an option. Their only option is a bus. Some people like the bus. Some people don't like the bus. And that bus being, whether it be the Commuter Express, which is a phenomenal luxury bus, great schedule, reclining chairs, Wi-Fi, $2.50. It's wonderful. Or your regular bus. Some people just don't like a bus and they'd prefer to have a train. So if you're asking me what I would like to see, I would like to see that money used for technology to fill in first mile, last mile. I'd like to see more train stations and train lines going into pockets of large population to help them use the train. I'd like to see, you know, people that can't afford the congestion pricing, this is really going to hurt them. And they might live in one of those areas that that's not properly served. They should be able to get some kind of subsidy so their work isn't disrupted. These people need to make a living.
Why then can we not say, if my loss in productivity is costing me $2,900 and I, Rudy Salo, want to spend that $2,900 towards micromobility, right? Or first mile, last mile, but micromobility. Why can't we do that as opposed to putting the $2,900 in some kind of fund that would then pay for transit projects, infrastructure projects that you yourself may not be a big fan of? You would rather spend that money towards a specific solution, as would I, right? Like if I had the ability to say, hey, here's $2,900 that it's whatever, it's my congestion price, right? And again, I'm operating that I understand I'm going to have to pay a bit more to alleviate traffic, and I'm okay with that. But can I say that, okay, well, my $2,900, I'd like for that to go to micromobility solutions, though. I don't really want it to go to pay towards streets, because as much as streets get beat up, and I'm very lucky that in Orange County here, and specifically where I live, the streets are wide, they're paid. But the other day when I was in Anaheim, the streets are a little bit more beat up, but, you know, cars are meant to be beat up.
Why can't I
write a check for $2,900 to the powers that be that would just go to, you know, funding investments in micromobility?
I appreciate the fact that you're thinking of alternatives. Like, in a lot of ways, we are already funding transit projects. You know, we've in the county of Los Angeles, we've passed 4 measures of sales tax increases. That's how we even got the trains to be built. You know, 1980, 1990, 2008. And recently in 2016, we passed half-cent sales tax measures, and we've been using those funds primarily towards transit, but we're also using those funds towards roads. And those are people basically saying, I'm willing to pay more. What you're saying is, that's great, but perhaps there's other alternatives to building infrastructure, voluntary or some kind of notion. Yes. I'm all for that. I'm all for rethinking how we pay for infrastructure. It's something I'm passionate about. That's what I do on a daily basis. I work in government finance. I help infrastructure projects throughout the country be built, primarily in transportation, but in other areas as well. I do think we need a retooling and a rethinking of how we raise revenue and how we share that revenue. And I like the voluntary aspect of it. And I like working with the companies, with the private companies, and getting them to think more along the lines of, hey, I'm an electric car company. You know, my drivers are not, you know, paying their fair share for the road. I would like to voluntarily take a fee from those drivers and set it aside into a fund and have that used towards infrastructure. I like the alternative thinking. I like what you're thinking, Dennis. That's what we need to have more of.
So this reminds me of a company, of a shoe company called Toms, in which... And I don't think this goes for Toms, but there's other companies out there, right, that they voluntarily say that a portion of sales is going to some humanity project, some nonprofit project.
A child,
right?
Gets some shoes. You know, you buy a pair of shoes, they get a pair of
shoes. Exactly.
Listen, man, I'm all for alternative thinking. That's one of the reasons why I want to be even more involved on your show, and I'm honored to be your transportation correspondent. It really means a lot to me, is because I'm passionate about rethinking infrastructure and how we pay for it. And I could sense now that some of my craziness is getting into your head. I'm seeing it, and I am ecstatic.
You know, and I won't let you fully in, but yes.
You're letting me in a little bit, well, man. I'm trying to
like play it down a little bit, but there's some other things too that I won't communicate just yet.
I appreciate it.
But you will be shocked when you hear some of the evolutions of my thoughts when it now comes to transportation.
Thank you. And if I can convince somebody like you, Mr. Orange County auto dealer, car guy, to rethink things, then I can convince the world.
Well, look, things need to be rethunk, because especially, again, in the case of L.A. and traffic congestion, it's just to not do anything anymore just doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm tired.
Amen.
I'm tired of going up to L.A. and knowing the fact that I have a full day that I have to spend going up and back to L.A., and it's not fun. I really wish I had more of my own time to do things, and talking on the phone doesn't cut it anymore.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, I know you and I have a meeting up in February. It's in the middle of the day. Have you taken a look at the Metrolink or the Amtrak schedule down at the Irvine station to see if you could just take the train up to Union Station? I'm just asking a question.
No, why? I have not.
Why? Because I've taken the train down whenever I need to come down to Orange County other than here. When I go to the Ducks game or I go to an Angels game, I actually take the train down. And then either I'll Uber at home or I'll take the train back. But you should look into it. I think it would be a wonderful experience for you.
I don't mind saying this. I paid my dues. I had a DUI back in the day, which I did not have access to a car. And this is when I was living up in LA. And this is before ride sharing. So I either had my bike, or when I wanted to come down to Orange County, yeah, I was taking the train and saying, hey, either my sister or my parents, can you pick me up so I can come over and do whatever, you know, whatever the case. So I had my share of experiencing public transportation in LA. And because I had my share of it too, that's kind of a big reason why I don't do it again. It wasn't a fun experience. It wasn't nice. Like, I didn't, when I lived in Playa Vista and I wanted to get up to Santa Monica, being on a bus.
No, it's a mess.
Like, that was terrible.
Well, it's still a mess. And the issue of, like I said, man, there's certain pockets of LA, and Playa Vista is one of them. Now, soon the Crenshaw line's going to be moved in, so the north part of Playa Vista will be better served. And you have first mile, last mile solutions like scooters and hopefully VIA and these other things, and you'll be plugged into the system. But yes, 12 years ago, I got rid of my car and I lived without a car in Los Angeles. This was 2007. I lived in North Redondo Beach, 1 mile away from the train. I was able to walk. Taxis were prohibitively expensive. The buses weren't even built out the way they are now. And there was no Uber and Lyft. It was very difficult. It was so difficult that after about 9 months, I wound up getting a car. Okay, so I feel you, but things are a lot better now and they're getting better.
So AAA had their study that they produced last year in your driving costs. And one of the things that they had juxtaposed was the cost of ride hailing as a primary mode of transportation versus normal car ownership. And so over, call it 11,000 miles a year, rounding up 11,000 miles per year, if you solely relied on ride hailing services, you would spend approximately $20,118. So that's over 11,000 miles. If you owned a car, and again, over the same amount of miles, about 11,000 miles, your vehicle ownership would be $7,321. So a significant savings by owning a car. And that is including gas, maintenance, DMV registration. So that paints a different picture. And again, I'm sure this study, they have their own motives in producing it, because AAA is an insurance company, and what are they if they don't have drivers who aren't insured? But this does kind of paint, though, this other picture of that you can't just rely on ride hailing, right? And I'm not saying that's your argument.
Oh yeah,
right?
No, I wasn't. I use ride hailing. I use Lyft sometimes when I'm working late for a client, or I use it a lot as a supplement for when I'm doing a lot of client service stuff and I don't have my car with me. And Yeah, no, I mean, look, I mean, that study is a good one. I think the numbers are a little, I don't know, I just seems a little too, $7,000. I mean, you know how much, every time I take my car in to get serviced, it's at least $1,500 every 9 months. So it's like, okay.
$1,500 every 9 months.
I got sucker ricking up.
Porsche,
no, man,
Panamera,
I got a Lexus.
Jesus,
no, I got sucker ricking across my head. That's why. What do you mean? Come on.
Yeah, look, you're making the car business boom. So you
that's
know what?
Why I want to kill it. No, just kidding. I don't. I mean, come on. That's a ridiculous thing.
Okay,
I mean,
so
my favorite vacations are road trips. Don't forget that.
But we're going to be doing one here. Actually, I have an idea I want to share with you.
All right, good.
So let's just end with some facts here. And listeners, if you get the chance, check out the INRIX, INRIX. 2017 traffic scorecard. There's some very, very interesting information that, again, hopefully starts to influence your decision on how you should be voting for measures, how you should be viewing particular policies and regulations that will be coming up over the next year and a half. If it's the congestion pricing in LA to once the 2020 elections come up, and whatever propositions that may be on the ballot there. But on this study, they ranked the top 25 major cities that have the most traffic. And as I mentioned earlier, Los Angeles is at number one, where drivers spend about approximately 102 hours, peak hours, in congestion.
By the way, just the whole 102. One of the reasons, one of the ways Metro is rolling out the whole congestion pricing discussion is either Metro, the Southern California Association of Governments. It's called the 102 program or the 102 thing. Like they're driving home that 102 number. So it is important that people recognize that that 102 number is an important thing in the you know, advertising, if you will, or the one of the positive ways that they want to reduce the 102 with congestion pricing.
Okay, second on the list, you have Moscow. They have 91 peak hours spent in congestion. New York City is number three. That's also 91, so I think that's a little bit of a tie there. Sao Paulo, Brazil, is 86 peak hours in congestion. San Francisco, number five, 79. Six, Bogota, Colombia, 75 peak hours in congestion. London is number seven at 74. Then you can go, there's Atlanta, Paris, Miami, Bangkok, and ranked number 25 is Munich, Germany. Now, one of the cities not on the list is Stockholm, in which, again, it seems as if there are cities that are implementing congestion pricing, the two cities that are often mentioned as the model are London, which according to the study is ranked number seven, and Stockholm, which isn't ranked on this list. So that's something to think about.
As well as Singapore. Remember, Singapore is not on this list either.
Singapore too, actually. You're absolutely correct
about
that.
So that's two out of the three.
Two out of the three. So just something interesting to think about. So listeners, check out that Laura Nelson LA Times article. Check out INRIX. And we'll be doing some more episodes to talk about this just because, again, I certainly would agree with Rudy that when it starts to affect your wallet, that's when you will, I guess, be not only forced to act, but that's when you probably should be acting at that point. So anyhow, okay, thanks for tuning into this episode of Wisco Weekly. We'll be back with another episode next week. As we end every episode, cheers, pros, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kambay, mabruk, tutsins, yamas, to the customer experience.